नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। एवं सविप्रो भगवत्सुहृत्तदा दृष्ट्वा स्वभृत्यार्जितं पराजितम्। तद्ज्ञानवेगोद्घटितात्मबन्धनस् धामलेपे चिरथा सतं गतिम्। Thus seeing how the unconquerable Supreme Lord is nonetheless conquered by his own servants, the Lord's dear Brahman friend felt the remaining knots of material attachments within his heart being cut by the force of his constant meditation on the Lord. In a short time, he attained Lord Krishna's supreme abode, the destination of great saints. Purport. Sudama's earthly fortune has been described. And now Shukadev Goswami describes the treasure the Brahman enjoyed in the next world. Sri Jiva Goswami mentions that Sudama's last trace of illusion lay in the subtle pride of being a renounced Brahman. This trace was also destroyed by contemplating the Lord's submission to his devotees. Welcome to Radha Gopinath Temple. Today we are celebrating Pushyabhishek, our flower festival. Why should there be a flower festival? That is one question. The next question, why should there not be a flower? On the path of bhakti, we will devise our creative imagination to figure out any excuse for a festival. But the principle, which is the very essence of all the philosophy of spirituality, is discussed in this particular chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam. We find an identical verse that Krishna speaks in Bhagavad Gita in this chapter. Patram pushpam phalam toyam yome bhakta prayachchite. Tadaham bhaktu bharitam ashnami priyatatmana. That even if one offers me a simple leaf, a little water, a fruit, or a flower, if it is offered with love and devotion, the Supreme Lord says, I will accept it. And beyond that, the Srimad Bhagavatam tells how not only does the Lord accept it, but the unconquerable becomes conquered by that love. Anyone, in whatever particular status of society one may be, can offer a leaf. Leaves are more or less free. A little water. A fruit or a flower. He doesn't specify what type of flower. He doesn't say a gardenia or a marigold or a lotus flower. Any flower. Because Krishna does not accept the thing that is offered, but accepts the love and devotion in which it is offered. Sarvaloka Maheshwaram. Everything is already God's property. He does not need anything from us. He doesn't need our wisdom. He doesn't need our strength. He doesn't need our donations. Because Krishna tells in Gita, I'm the strength of the strong, I'm the intelligence of the intelligent, I'm the abilities in everyone. There's a beautiful example of how to worship the Ganges River. We take water from Mother Ganga in our palms, and with a loving prayer, we offer that water back into the river. Does Mother Ganga need that palm full of water? There are limitless trillions of palmfuls of water in the current of Ganga. Begins at Gangotri and the peaks of the Himalayas and comes down to Ganga Sagar and the Bay of Bengal, traveling 1,000 miles. In some places, Mother Ganga is several miles wide. What is a palm full of water? And whether we are little tiny children with small little palms, or whether we're big wrestlers with gigantic palms, does it make any difference to the river Ganga? It's all insignificant. And not only that, we're taking it from her. We're taking it and then saying, oh Ganga, by my greatness I'm offering you water. But if we offer with humility and devotion, Mother Ganga considers that handful of water more precious, more full than all the rest of the water she has in her river. That is the power of love. And in the same way, although whatever we have is coming from Krishna, when we offer it with humility, with gratitude, and with devotion, Krishna accepts it. It's a simple thing we can all understand. In my own life, I remember when I was a little boy. Because I'm a boy, we always forget the details that girls usually are quite attentive to. So it was my mother's birthday. And for my mother, remembering her on her birthday was very much a expression that we cared about her. But as a boy, she should already know we care about her. It doesn't really matter. So I forgot it was her birthday. And I came home after a long day and I remembered it's her birthday and I didn't get her anything. So I ran back in our little backyard. We just had a tiny backyard. And my mother, she grew roses. Because it was a small yard, she only had about five or six rose vines. And there was only one rose on it. And she grew it. It was hers. So I didn't have time to run to a store because I was too lazy. So I just broke a rose off her bush with all the thorns on it and everything. And I ran in and I said, happy birthday, mother. And I gave it to her. She started to cry in happiness. And she put the rose in her forehead, and she smelled the rose, and she pressed the rose to her heart. And she said, it's not the thing that counts, it's the thought, the love that counts. Because you remembered me with love. To her, that rose was more valuable than if I would have given her a pearl or a diamond necklace. So that's nature. Any gift, its value to the heart is the sincerity of the devotion and gratitude in which we offer it. Its monetary value is meaningless in terms of the heart. So Krishna, who is unconquerable, proclaims that he is conquered by such love. Now, how could the unconquerable be conquerable? By the will of the unconquerable. So this particular story we're reading is a wonderful narration which brings to light this truth. I'd like to relay it to you today. It is from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 81, Text 40. In this chapter, we find Parikshit Maharaj, who is a great king with a magnificent palace, a wonderful family. He has huge kingdom, and everyone loves him. Can you imagine a political leader that everyone loves? Why did everyone love him? Because he genuinely was a saintly person. He loved God. And therefore, he saw every living being as the children of God. He didn't see, this is my kingdom, this is my palace, this is my power. This is all Krishna's, and I'm being entrusted with this as a caretaker. And how I treat even the least among my citizens is how I am actually showing my love for Krishna, for God. And therefore, he treated everyone with such respect. How he protected, how he gave the real rights, not of only of the body, of the mind, but of the soul. He provided for the physical needs through his encouragement, through his equal-mindedness. He totally inspired the minds, and through his own example of complete devotion, Shadarnagati surrender to the Supreme Lord, he nourished everyone spiritually, and therefore everyone loved him. It's a common principle. Sometimes people think, why nobody loves me? But a higher question is, how could I love others? Because unless we give love, we really can't recognize love even when it comes to us, in a true sense. So he was simply giving, and therefore everyone was reciprocating. But it's a long story. He got a message that he was going to die in 7 days. He was still young, at the peak of his career. Now, what would you do if you were received this news where with absolute certainty you would die in 7 days? Some people would go on a vacation and really enjoy like never before. There was a television show in the 1960s. It was a very, very popular show about a doctor who was extremely wealthy, and he got the message that he was going to die in 1 year. He had a disease or something. So he decided, I want to make this year the most enjoyable year of my life. And it was a weekly show. One week he was skiing in the Swiss Alps. Another week he was scuba diving in the Caribbean. Another week he was, you know, skydiving in Colorado. He was just always doing it. And every time he had some very beautiful Hollywood actress with him. So the people were thinking, this person is so intelligent. He really knows how to enjoy. The show was so popular. And the ads and commercials were selling so many products because so many people were watching that they had to extend his life another year. So the show could play another season. And then they extended his life another year. Until the ratings went down, they didn't let him die. So that if our standard is just material enjoyment, then that television show makes a lot of sense. But if we have a spiritual perspective, it doesn't. Real happiness is not what is perishable. Real happiness, it is what is eternally within us. So when Parikshit, he could have enjoyed like nobody could imagine with his wealth and power. But he just put on a little loincloth and decided he would fast until his death. And he went to the banks of the river Ganges. The place is still there today. It's called Shukatal. There's a banyan tree. And there on the bank of the Ganges, he wanted to associate with sadhus, with saintly persons, and just hear about Krishna. Just hear about the Supreme Lord in his various incarnations and surrender his heart. And this was such big news that the king was coming just to hear from the sages. And he wasn't angry, he was grateful. He wasn't thinking, why is this happening to me? He was thinking, how fortunate I am. Because we all have to die sometime. And I know when, so I could really prepare myself. And I'm so much involved with so many distractive activities, and now I could totally focus myself on my bhakti, on my yoga, and completely absorb myself in the highest perfection by hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord. So all the yogis and sages and rishis, they all came together, thousands of them, just to be there to help the king in his last days, to remember God. And they were wondering who is most qualified to speak. Because King Parikshit asked some simple questions, which are very relevant to everyone. There are many religions and many scriptures and many philosophies, and I don't have time to study them all. I only have 7 days. What is the essence of all of them? What is the prime duty for all human beings? And what is the most important duty for a person who is about to die? So they came together to discuss who's most suitable to speak. And there were people like Vyasadeva, the author of Vedic literatures, the compiler. Narada Muni was there, Bhardwaj Muni was there, Gautam Rishi was there, Vishwamitra Muni, Vasishtha Muni, the greatest sages of history were all there. And then a 16-year-old boy named Shukadev. Shukadev was just wandering through the forest. He was so oblivious to materialistic life that people thought he was kind of crazy. And he didn't care. because he was in another world, although his body was in this world. He was so compassionate and respectful and kind to all, but he wasn't concerned so much with material conventions. So people were harassing him, and he was just smiling. And then these people were following him and saying names against him and throwing things at him, and he was just smiling and for nums. And then he walks into this clearing on the bank of the Ganges, and they see all the greatest sages and rishis and the king of the world all stand up to receive him. So all these people kind of went away. And everyone unanimously accepted Shukadev should speak. Because although he's so young, he has such a pure heart, and he has heard from his guru with such attention. So Parikshit Maharaj is in this particular chapter, he's already, this is the end of the 10th canto almost, so he's probably only has about one day to live when this is being spoken. Maybe 1.5 days. And he's asking Shukadev Goswami that I'm fasting for about 6 days. I'm not even drinking water, but I'm feeling so completely spiritually and emotionally strong because I'm drinking the sweetness of hearing this divine Leela's, the teachings of the Lord and the pastimes of the Lord. It is food for the soul. And he was asking about this principle of devotion, and Shukadev Goswami wanted to tell a special story about a Brahma named Sudama. If you go to the Gujarat province of India, there's a town called Purbandar. It's still there today. And there's a temple where Sudama lived. Still there, very historical. I'm going to tell the history of that place. In fact, you know who was born in that same town that Sudama was living? Mahatma Gandhi. Sudama was so materially in poverty, but he just didn't care because he was just satisfied in his devotion, in his seva. His body was so emaciated that all over you could see his bones his veins bulging out. His clothes, even though he washed them, he would wash them in like some muddy little pond. So they always looked kind of dirty, even though they were freshly washed. And his clothes were all torn up and tattered. In his house, the walls were crumbling, the roof was caved in. It was like just a thatched hut, which was in terrible condition. He lived there with his wife. His wife, who was a completely pure-hearted lady, she didn't mind the poverty herself. But it broke her heart to see her husband in such poverty. So one day she approached him and said, when you were young, you went to the Gurukul, to the school of the Guru, along with Krishna. You see, Krishna lived in the forest of Vrindavan as a cowherd boy for the first approximately 12 years of his life. And then, to fulfill his purpose of his incarnation in this world, he later moved to Mathura and then Dwarka. And in Dwarka, it was a kingdom with the most magnificent palaces. She said, Krishna is your friend, and he's the husband of the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi. Why don't you go there? Because Krishna is the friend of the poor, and he's the friend of the Brahmins, and you're a poor Brahmin. Just ask him for our basic needs. I hate to see you suffer in this way. But she understood that he didn't really care about his own suffering. And she didn't actually care about her suffering. She cared about him. Shrusti said, and even for me, do it for me. She knew if he was going to do it for her, he would do it. But he wouldn't do it for himself. But she wasn't doing it for him. She was herself. She was doing it for him. So she said, do it for me, only so he could do it for himself. Does that make sense? I don't think it makes sense, but I tried. She said, I know you're a devotee and you want nothing for yourself, but why should we be living in such extreme poverty? Krishna will be happy to give us. So please go. You haven't seen him in a long time. So many years. Go to Dwarka. This is the beauty of their love for each other, their respect. He was willing to go only for her sake. And she was asking him to go only for his sake. So Sudama was thinking, it's not my position to ask God for anything, except how can I serve you? Srila Prabhupada would tell us the highest prayer is how can I serve you with love? How can I please you? Nadanam na janam na sundarim kabitam vajagadisha kamaye. Mama janmani janmani shwari bhavatad bhakti rahoita kitvai. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu offered this prayer, which is really the essence of bhakti. He's praying to Krishna. I do not want wealth. I do not want fame. I do not want great scholarship. I do not want the most pleasurable experiences of the senses. I don't even want liberation, mukti. My only prayer is I want to serve you unconditionally for your pleasure. In any situation you put me, even if it's birth after birth after birth. That was the mood of Sudama. So he was thinking, on the pretext of going on my wife's, for her purpose, I'll get to see Krishna after so long. And he told his wife that, how can I go without offering him a gift? Can you give me a gift that I can present? And she looked around, and there was literally nothing in their house. So she went out door to door to beg. How many of you have been beggars in India at any time in your life? Well, I used to be one. Sadhus, the way I was taught, is it's a very honorable activity if you're doing it as a in a spirit of renunciation for our spiritual upliftment. But when you beg, especially in the villages near the Himalayas, people usually don't give you anything. Usually they just say, get out of here. We have enough beggars around, out from here. And they abuse you. And that's a really nice thing because it helps our ego to understand that not everyone recognizes me as a great sadhu coming to bestow blessings upon them. And when somebody does give you something, they always give you the cheapest, most worthless thing they have. And what is that? Flat rice. Flat rice is the cheapest food. It's basically flat, it's dry, and it doesn't cost anything. And they don't usually give you from the top of the barrel. They go to the bottom. And they give you this kind of dirty flat rice. So that's what she got. And it was stale. She got 4 palmfuls of stale, dry, flat rice. And she didn't have a bag. She just took an old torn up little cloth and wrapped it around the rice and gave it to her husband. And he didn't have any pockets. He just kind of tied it around his waist and walked to Dwarka, the most beautiful kingdom of the world. And as he came to Dwarka, he saw these magnificent palaces. And being a humble Brahmin who was used to being abused, he was thinking, are they going to let me in? But as soon as the guards and everyone saw a simple Brahmin, they escorted him through these beautiful gardens to Krishna's principal palace. And they brought him right into the inner sanctum of the palace, where Krishna was sitting on the bed of Rukmini, the goddess of fortune. And as soon as Krishna saw him from a distance, he jumped up from the bed, he ran across the room into the courtyard and embraced Sudama with tears of love. I'm so grateful that you came to bless my house. That was Krishna speaking. And then he brought Sudama and put Sudama on his own bed, and then Krishna got on the floor and washed Sudama's feet, offered him a very nice seat. Rukmini, the Ladini Shakti, the feminine divine energy of the Supreme, with a little chamara fan, she was lovingly fanning Sudama. As Rukmini and Krishna were offering him very wonderful food and gifts, and they were speaking, Krishna told Sudama, do you remember long ago, so many years when we were children, we were living at our guru's ashram together, Sandipani Muni. And one time, our guru mata, our mother guru, the wife of our guru, she told us, go get some firewood into the... So we went into the forest to collect wood. And while we were there, an unseasonable storm came about. Everything became dark. There were high winds, torrential rains, and we were trembling and shivering, and we couldn't really even walk. And then the night came. But we very carefully protected the wood we were going to bring for our Guru Mata. And we were lost. How is it that God becomes lost? By his own will. These are pastimes. Krishna appears within this world to perform these pastimes, to reveal to us the deepest philosophical, social lessons. Through his own example. And the highest of all lessons is how he reciprocates with the love of his devotee. So the next morning, Sandipani Muni came to the forest looking for Sudama and Krishna, and they found him. And in this way, Krishna was showing the world how to be humble before one's teacher or guru. And Krishna presented him the wood. And Sandipani Muni was so very deeply moved by this. Even though he knew he was God, he was playing the pastime. He knew that it would please Krishna by being his guru to teach the world. And Sudama Vipra Sandipani Muni blessed them, that all the knowledge and of the scriptures that I have taught you, I bless. It will forever be fresh in your mind, and all your desires will be fulfilled. So Krishna and Sudama were remembering the good old days in that sense. And they spent the whole night just talking together, laughing together, relishing each other's company. And then the next morning, Krishna knows everything. He's within everyone's heart. He knows our intentions. He asks Sudama, "Did you bring a gift for me?" And Sudama, Krishna just fed him the most luxurious food. And he's sitting on a beautiful throne in a beautiful palace. How can I give Krishna 4 palmfuls of stale, dry, dirty, chipped rice from wrapped up in an old cloth? He felt so ashamed. He didn't answer Krishna's question, which kind of meant, "No, I didn't bring you anything." But Krishna knew. And Krishna reached over exactly to where that satchel of chipped rice was around his waist, and Krishna grabbed it. And he opened it, and there he saw this dirty, stale, dry rice. And with tears of gratitude, Krishna took a handful of it and ate it. And he went to take another handful, and Rukmini stopped him. He said, "That's enough. Don't take any more." He said, "By accepting this one handful of rice, you've already made him the wealthiest man in the entire creation." What is real wealth? When Krishna's pleased with our offerings, that's our real wealth. That's what gives satisfaction to the heart. So that's what she was thinking in terms of Sudama and Krishna. And she was also indicating to all of the others around who were really surprised. How is this person who's completely ragged and completely disheveled and skinny and emaciated and wearing the most worthless clothes, Krishna's embracing him. He's talking to him all night. He's eating his rice. So Rukmini stopped him. Her real intention was, if she knew Krishna was about to eat all of it, and she wanted some of it. And she wanted to distribute it to all the other very, very opulently living people of Dwarka, because they should also taste the sweetness of the love of this devotee. As Sudama was leaving, Krishna walked with him quite a long distance along the roadside outside of the kingdom before he bade him farewell. And Sudama's walking home now, and he was so happy. He was thinking in his heart, "Who am I? Just a very, very lowly friend of a Brahmin, so unqualified, with nothing. And who is Krishna? The absolute truth, the source of everything that exists, the god of all gods, the husband of the goddess of fortune. And yet, with his own arms, he embraced me with love. Sudama was so emotional. With tears of ecstasy, he was remembering these, every word that he spoke with Krishna. The ecstasy in his heart is real wealth. And Krishna accepted that flat rice from me, and he loved it. And then it was Sudama who cited this verse, Patram pushpam palam toyam yome bhakta prayachchati taraham Shukadev Goswami. He's saying the same words that Krishna was to speak. Krishna is bhavagrahi janardana. He doesn't see the thing that is offered to us. He sees the love and devotion in which it is offered, the purpose, the intention. And even if one offers a little water or a leaf or a flower or a twig, if it's offered with love and devotion to Krishna, it is more valuable than all the wealth of creation. So he was thinking like that. Krishna was pleased with my little offering. But then he was thinking, but my wife wanted me to ask him for something for us. But how could I ask him for anything? Prahlad Maharaj was in this mood too. He told Narasingha Dev, the Lord, that my life of devotion to you, if I ask you for anything material in return, I'm not a devotee. I'm just doing business with you, giving and taking. So Sudama, he was thinking like this, I'm coming home and I actually am bringing nothing back with me. But I'm sure my wife will understand. He was just too embarrassed to ask something. So he came to where his home was, and he was extremely confused because he saw beautiful palaces, more magnificent than the palaces in Dwarka where Krishna lived. He saw wonderful lakes with lotus flowers and swans and beautiful parks with gardens and auspicious trees, peacocks and nightingales and cuckoos all singing beautiful songs. And he saw the most wonderful people all smiling, effulgent, wearing nice clothes, and they were all looking at him. And he was thinking, where am I? This is where my little thatched hut used to, I thought, did I go the wrong direction? I've been here so many, what's happening? Then the people came up to him and they welcomed him home. And at that moment, his wife got the news that he returned and she came out of a palace. And now she wasn't skinny and poverty-stricken anymore. She was effulgent, and she was wearing nice garments. And she approached her husband. And he didn't recognize her. He never saw her like this before. And one of the people close by said, Sudama, this is your wife. And the wife was just looking down at the ground, weeping tears, thinking, just see how kind Krishna is. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur Acharya tells that what happened is in that really simple home with crumbling walls and dilapidated roof caving in, it was just a tiny one-room little hut. No doors or windows, just holes. Hole in the wall was a window, hole in the wall was a door. Simple place. No beds, just a clay floor. She went to sleep at night. And when she woke up, she was living in the most beautiful palace in the whole universe. And when she went outside, she saw these gardens where there were just, you know, dry fields. And she understood immediately that this is the grace of Krishna. So as soon as Sudama saw the happiness of his wife, immediately his body transformed into a very healthy body. Now all of a sudden there was nice clothes on him. And they couldn't even speak a word together. They were just so much immersed in emotion. Because ultimately he only went for her and she only wanted him to go for him. They wanted nothing for themselves. Servant of the servant of the servant. And it is described, and this is the most important part of the whole story. They lived in that environment for the rest of their lives. But they had the exact same spirit as they did when they were living in total poverty. Nothing is mine. Everything is for Krishna. Everything for others. Whether they had nothing except some flat rice and a little hut, or whether they had more wealth than Indra, their mood was simply to serve. Nothing is mine. This is bhakti. Whether we're living in a cave or whether we're multi-billionaires, if our happiness comes through pleasing God and serving others in the spirit of devotion, that's our true wealth. So Krishna wanted to show through this devotee that true bhakti is unconditional by circumstances. The real wealth is the love of our heart, because that's the only thing Krishna will accept. It is described that Sudama and his wife, they lived together simply giving and giving and giving and serving with no anxiety. And at the end of their lives, they attain spiritual perfection. Sudama appeared again in this world. I'd like to tell you this story. Krishna appeared in the Dwapar Yuga, which is about 5,000 years ago. And according to the scriptures, which were written over 5,000 years ago, that same Supreme Godhead, Krishna, would appear as Lord Chaitanya in the role of his own devotee. And he is the one who really established this Harinam Kirtan movement. So Lord Chaitanya was living in Navadvip. And one day, with his most loving, intimate devotees, he was having kirtan at the house of Srivas. Now, these kirtans were very special, because these were the topmost yogis of prem, ecstatic love. And when they would chant, it wasn't just singing. It was an expression of the ecstasies of the love of their heart. they were chanting together. And Lord Chaitanya, on very rare occasions, would actually reveal himself as Krishna to his devotees. So on one day he sat in the altar, and all the devotees were sat chanting, dancing, and offering their love. And Lord Chaitanya saw a very simple Brahmin whose name was Suklambar. And Suklambar had a little torn up cloth satchel or bag around his shoulder. It describes the background of Suklambar. He had such love of God. He had such deep, profound compassion. He was the happiest person because of that inner wealth. But externally, he appeared really poor. He had a little straw hut that he lived in near the banks of the Ganges River. And Suklambar, he was a beggar. He would go to at least 10 houses every day. And some people don't give you anything, and other people just give you a handful of what? Flat rice. That's what beggars get. To this day, that's what beggars get. So he had this dirty, stale, dry, flat rice in his bag that he would beg. And after he would go to all these houses in the morning, it describes he was constantly chanting Krishna's names. He was always in ananda ecstasy, remembering Krishna. And he would take that rice and he would clean it and he would make an offering to Krishna with love and devotion, and then he would eat some. That was Suklambar Brahmachari. So on this one day, he just finished his begging, and the little bit of rice was in his bag, and he was dancing in front of Lord Chaitanya with such jubilation. Lord Chaitanya called him, "Suklambar, come here, come here." And Suklambar came. And Suklambar was so totally liberated and free, the way he was dancing so sweetly. Everybody was looking at him. And Lord Chaitanya said, "Come closer." And as he was dancing and smiling, his bag was swinging to and fro, Lord Chaitanya thrust his hand in the bag and took a handful of that rice and ate it. And with tears of happiness, Lord Chaitanya thrust his hand in the bag again and again, and eating handful after handful of that rice. And Suklambar fell to the ground. He said, "It's stale, it's unclean. There's stones in it. How are you eating this, my lord?" And Lord Chaitanya said to Suklambar, "You may not remember, but I remember. You are my poverty-stricken beggar, birth after birth. In your last life, you were Sudama. And in your last life, you wouldn't offer me your rice. I had to grab it. I had to steal it from you. And similarly, I am doing so today, tasting the sweetness of the love that is within this rice is my greatest happiness." You see, usually when we offer food to the Lord, there are certain rituals performed. We offer yantras, tantras, mantras. We do puja, we do mudras. Suklambar didn't offer any of these. But because of the love, the devotion of his heart, the Supreme Lord himself was so hungry for that love, he stole it. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he told Suklambar Brahmachari, because I have accepted your rice from you, which was infused with your devotion, I am so grateful, I am conquered by you. I have no power to repay you. When Krishna ate that rice of Sudama, he was thinking, with all that I possess of all existence, I have nothing valuable enough to pay back Sudama for this rice, because his love is beyond the limits of wealth. So as a token of Krishna's gratitude, he gave him the most beautiful home of anyone in the universe. But Krishna felt himself, this is insufficient, but it's the best I could do on the material level. But what he did give him is the happiness of that love. And on that day, Lord Chaitanya told Suklambar, because I have accepted this rice from you, I bestow upon you the highest spiritual perfection of prema bhakti. All the rules, all the philosophies, all the regulations, all the rituals of all religions are all servants of one principle. Pure love and devotion. It is the root of all spiritual processes. It's unmotivated love. Beyond all the physical perishing wealth of this world, beyond the eight mystic powers of the yogis, the Vedas describe even mukti, liberation from all suffering in the supreme peace of Brahman. Even mukti stands with folded palms to worship prema, ecstatic love. It's the only true experience that could give the highest ananda to the soul, to the atma, is to feel the limitless love of Krishna and to express our love for Krishna. The highest truth of all scriptures, of all knowledge, of all yoga, the Srimad Bhagavatam explains, is that the devotee is completely conquered by the infinite sweetness of Krishna's love. And Krishna is forever conquered by the sweetness of the devotee's love. You see, in this material world, everyone wants to be the conqueror. But when we actually conquer our restless, polluted mind and senses, then our ultimate aspiration is to be conquered by Krishna's love. And Krishna's ultimate aspiration is to be conquered by his devotee's love. Sri Radha is conquered by Krishna, and Krishna is conquered by Sri Radha. And that lila is what we are all meant to participate in. So Lord Chaitanya gave Suklambar Brahmachari prema forever. Because Krishna tasted his simple little rice, dry, flat, stale rice. Patram pushpam palam toya. So today, all of you are, should I tell one more story? Or because you have nothing else to do while you're... There's another connection to this. When Lord Chaitanya was going on a South Indian tour, he came to the house of Kurma. Actually, there's a temple of Kurmadev, one of the avatars of Vishnu. And Lord Chaitanya was dancing and inspiring all the villagers and townspeople in the area to take this name of Krishna, Kirtan, and dance and chant together. And as they were doing so, he was bestowing such intimate love upon them that soon there were thousands and thousands of people. Everyone wanted to see the beautiful form of the Lord dancing and chanting, and they were all being filled with devotion. And after hours and hours of this kirtan, one kurma invited him to his home. And after receiving the Lord, Kurma said to him that I have a family and I have an occupation, and the waves from the ocean of material existence are causing me so much frustration. I can't tolerate them anymore. I want to go with you wherever you go. Now, most people would think Lord Chaitanya would be very happy. He wanted to renounce everything and just go with the Lord and serve the Lord. Lord Chaitanya was a sannyasi. He was just a traveling swami at the time. Lord Chaitanya said, never speak like that again. You remain with your family. You remain with your occupation. But if you always chant Krishna's name and live in a spirit of seva, of service, and hear from the devotees and speak, share this message, share this wealth of devotion with others, I will always be with you. There's no need for you to go anywhere. And this was his message wherever he went. Whatever position we may be in society, whatever our status, whatever our... The real change is a change of heart that's required. Actually, Kurma Brahma was a wealthy man. So Lord Chaitanya left. And hours after he left, there was a simple man named Vasudev, who somehow or other understood that Lord Chaitanya is Krishna himself. Even though he never saw him, he could feel it within his heart, and he wanted so much to see him and to serve him. But Vasudev was totally rejected by the whole of society because he had what was in those days incurable leprosy. Such an advanced state of leprosy. That there was constantly pus and blood and infections oozing from his sores. And he smelled abominable. His flesh was decaying. And there were so many worms eating his body away. And if a single worm fell from his body, Vasudev would respectfully, gently pick up that worm and place it back in his body, thinking that I'm living in this body and the worm is living in the body, so we're neighbors. He was feeling such respect and love and compassion that he didn't want the worm to be homeless. So he had placed the worm back in his own body. Now, we cannot imitate him. But the principle is important. Paradukaduki, that as love of Krishna, love of God awakens, we become deeply compassionate for all other living beings. We see the soul, the Atma, as our true brothers and sisters, and we feel for them. That is bhakti. So So somehow or other, with great effort, Vasudev came all the way to this house. And when he arrived, he found out that almost a day ago, Lord Chaitanya had already left. And he felt so sad. The opportunity of my life I missed. But Sri Chaitanya, who's within the heart of everyone, he's Krishna. He understood the feelings, and he turned around and came all the way, walked so many hours and hours back to that house. And there he saw Vasudev. And he reached his long, beautiful, golden arms to embrace Vasudev. And Vasudev was thinking, no, no, you can't embrace me. My body is, there's pus and there's blood and there's, and it smells terrible and it's infectious. He tried to run away, but he couldn't escape. Sri Chaitanya embraced him and squeezed him to his body. And Sudama repeated this, and Vasudev repeated the same words of Sudama Vipra from this chapter that we are reading today. He said, who am I? Just a simple, fallen friend of a Brahmin who has no qualifications whatsoever. And who are you? You are the all-merciful, all-beautiful Supreme Lord, and yet you embrace me with your own arms, despite all my diseases. And as soon as the Lord embraced Vasudev, he was totally cured. His body became beautiful, effulgent, and full of health. And he was thinking, Vasudev was thinking in his mind, he didn't say anything, that previously I had nothing to be proud about because everyone rejected me and condemned me. But now when people see me, they will understand that I am the object of God's miracle. So I may become arrogant. I may become proud that I'm more spiritually fortunate than all of you. And if that pride, that arrogance enters the heart, then one cannot really serve you with feeling. He thought he was better off as a leper than with the possibility of becoming arrogant. These were his thoughts. And Lord Chaitanya spoke to him. He said, Vasudev, if you always chant Krishna's names, that will keep you pure. Always be in the mood of the servant, and share this gift with others. And then arrogance, pride will never enter your heart. So today, we have people from Ukraine. There are 40 devotees from Ukraine, and they are all very much affected by what's going on there. There's almost a civil war. Some devotees, their houses have been bombed, set on fire. Hundreds and hundreds of these devotees are refugees, bringing nothing with them to Western Ukraine or to Russia or to other places. They're all trying to help each other. So we have people of the Ukraine. We have people from all the various sectors of society of India. We have people from America. We have PhDs here, probably about 20 or 30 PhDs are sitting here. You have little people like me who only had one semester of junior college and I didn't even get good grades. And I'm speaking. We have great yoga masters like Raghunath and Hari Kirtan and Gopi Manjari. We have babies like Tarun. And we have grandparents like Mahaprabhu. We're almost in their 80s. Men and women and people with brown complexion or white complexion and black complexion and all kinds of... But it's not that... This is a special feature of this festival. Everyone's just doing the same thing, plucking the same flowers. Yes? The unity. Jules is here and Hachi, exalted world famous yogis. And we're all just together, one family, with a common purpose. The simplest possible thing. Who cannot pluck a flower? And yet the unity of all these flower petals together is our united offering of love. And tonight, all these flowers will be offered to Lord Krishna and Sri Radha. And after there will be over 1 ton of flowers. And people stand in line to donate the flowers because it's so special. In bhakti, there's no high or low on the basis of material qualification or disqualification. One little flower petal offered with devotion is more valuable than jewels, diamonds, and rubies offered without such humility, love, and devotion. This is the principle of our flower festival. And I thank you very much for participating. Hare Krishna. And now, with your permission, I'm going to get off this seat and pluck flowers. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Shri Radha Gopinath ki jai. Maharaj ki jai.